Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Tuesday, November 11th. I'm Sarith Hawk. Thousands of acres of land are now back in the hands of the Tule River Indian Tribe.
For many tribes, a connection to their homeland and a connection to the condition of that homeland is a crucial part of their culture.
We'll learn more about what's behind this effort known as the Land Back Movement, but first, these headlines. Governor Gavin Newsom has pardoned a Fresno businessman being held in ICE custody. Salm Bapur has been in a Kern County ICE facility since the summer. He was detained by immigration agents during a routine immigration check-in over a crime committed 25 years ago. Bapur's detainment has led to calls for his release from Fresno leaders and other business leaders. The pardon by Newsom may help his case once he goes before a judge. Newsom said Bapur has provided evidence he is living a, quote, upright life. California Attorney General Rob Bonta and nearly two dozen other state AGs on Monday announced a new legal fight over the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's a motion for a temporary restraining order challenging the U.S. Department of Agriculture's directive that states stop issuing full November SNAP benefits.
We're asking the court to block Saturday night's guidance and immediately make full SNAP benefits available. Americans shouldn't have to wait one day more.
The Department of Agriculture says it shouldn't be forced to use certain funds for SNAP because they might be needed elsewhere. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to keep full food aid payments on hold. The justices are expected to decide late today. The administration's appeal to the high court comes despite new efforts to end the federal shutdown, which would render the issue moot. A committee overseeing the renewal of a major tax measure in Fresno County is out with a breakdown of how the measure would fund local infrastructure. KVPR's Crescencio Rodriguez Delgado has these details.
Measure C is a half-cent sales tax that Fresno County residents pay into. It's up for renewal next year before it expires in 2027. Since it was first approved more than three decades ago, Measure C has generated $10 billion for county projects, so county leaders are eager to keep the tax in place. Last week, the Measure C Steering Committee released a breakdown of what the measure would fund. 65% of the funds would go toward fixing existing streets and roads, 25% would go toward public transit projects, and the rest would cover innovative projects and administration of the funds. The funding recommendation will go up for a vote by the Fresno Council of Governments later this month, and the final proposition will go before voters next November. For KVPR News, I'm Crescencio Rodriguez Delgado.
A new analysis by the San Francisco Chronicle reveals new data about the passage of Prop 50. The newspaper crunched the numbers to look specifically at how Latino voters voted on the measure. The analysis found Latinos swung from supporting President Trump last year to supporting redistricting that favors Democrats this year. The analysis also found support for Prop 50 was higher than support for Kamala Harris. Political experts say the economy is a major factor in how Latinos vote. The final touches are being added at a new major casino opening in Kern County this week. Hard Rock Tejon Casino is scheduled to open on Thursday. Last week, casino leaders and members of the Tejon tribe held a blessing ceremony for the Hard Rock Guitar Monument. That's the signature piece of Hard Rock Casinos. The casino is expected to provide roughly 2,500 jobs.
KVPR's annual Kern County reception is this month. Join us at Bakersfield Historic Nile Theater on Tuesday, November 18th for a celebration of public radio. Enjoy drinks and appetizers and chat with KVPR staff as we discuss where the station is heading. RSVPs are required. Head to kvpr.org/events to reserve your spot.
And now to our main story. The state of California recently oversaw the return of just over 1,700 acres to the Tule River Indian Tribe. The tribe is located east of Porterville in the Sierra Nevada foothills. The land return increases the tribe's land size by nearly a third, and it's part of a broader so-called land back movement taking place across the country with indigenous groups. California alone has helped facilitate the return of land to several other tribes, including the Yurok tribe in Northern California. In June, 73 square miles of land were returned in partnership with the Western Rivers Conservancy. Governor Gavin Newsom celebrated the Tule River Indian Tribe's land return in October as a critical step in deepening the relationship between the state and tribes. The effort also helps the state meet ambitious land conservation goals. To learn more about this major land return, Central Valley Daily recently spoke with Ches Oxendine. He's a staff writer with Tribal Business News. The news outlet covers Native American tribal issues across the U.S. Oxendine spoke with our host, Elizabeth Arkalian.
So, Ches, I thought we could start with you telling us a little bit about this land acquisition by the Tule River Indian Tribe. So, from your understanding, how did this come about and just why is it significant?
So, this acquisition came about through a partnership between several organizations, but it is part of an ongoing effort in California to return land to the tribes in that area. That comes from a multitude of reasons, both tribal sovereignty being respected, but also conservation concerns that have just led to this really concerted effort, in particular in California, but really across the country, to return lands to tribes. In the Tule River example in particular, conservation seemed to be kind of at the forefront there, with a big focus put on returning animals to the area and making sure that they're kept safe.
Yeah, I want to dive into the conservation aspect in just a moment. But just so listeners understand, I mean, this was 17,030 acres of ancestral land. And according to Governor Gavin Newsom's office, it's the largest ancestral land return in the Sierra Nevada foothills and Central Valley region. So are you able to tell us what this land used to be and how it transitioned to get back into the hands of the Tule River tribe? Like, was there a cost?
There was a cost. To my knowledge, that the direct cost was not disclosed. And you find that sometimes with a lot of these land back deals, that the full financial aspect of it is not fully disclosed because often private philanthropic partners are involved, as was the case here. This was in partnership with several state agencies, including a program under the California state government itself, a conservancy, and then some private foundational partners that brought it all together to be funded. As you said, it's over 17,000 acres. And kind of a general rule of land back is once you get past four digits, you're in historic territory at that point. There's not many land transfers, at least that I've covered. And I should say that I've been covering for this for about 5 years. That's one of the biggest ones I've seen. 17,000 is a very large number for this kind of thing. Most of them are very small, 100 to maybe 1,000 acres transfers usually.
You know, I want to dig into this sort of land back movement that you've referenced because it's actually pretty large and it's happening in a lot of places. And here in California, the state's helping fund other land returns across the state, right? So can you just talk about how some of those other projects are happening?
Absolutely. One of the biggest ones is also one of the largest transfers in the country. And that was earlier this year in June. The Yurok tribe over near the Klamath River announced that they acquired 47,000 acres along the Klamath River. It's about 73 square miles of land. That, where the financials were disclosed, was a $56 million deal. And that was, again, a conservation-driven project. A big partner in that project was the Western Rivers Conservancy. And you will find frequently that conservancies are kind of the driving partners. There's the tribes themselves, of course, leading and maneuvering these efforts. And then these conservancies are often, I don't know if bankrolling is quite the right word, but certainly playing a part in the financing of these projects.
So circling back to the return of the land to the Tule River tribe, the chairman of the tribe released a statement and said that the return of their land deepens environmental stewardship. Speaking of conservation and how important that is, can you explain what he means by that term, environmental stewardship for the tribe?
Yes. So for many tribes, and it's impossible to say for all tribes because, you know, they're not a monolith, but for many tribes, a connection to their homeland and a connection to the condition of that homeland is a crucial part of their culture. I think that's a fairly commonplace thread between a lot of tribal communities, is that home is land, right? Hmm. And so the condition of that land is important. And so you will find, as part of many tribes' mission toward their communities, that environmentalism is a major part of it. With respect to that, under the previous administration federally, under the current administration in California in particular, but again, across the country, you find that often tribes are looked to either outright taking over stewardship of a given piece of land, or co-stewardship or co-management, in order to include both protections against development of that land through legal means, but also implementing traditional ecological knowledge that those tribes may have cultivated over years and years and years of taking care of the land themselves in stewarding it going forward. That tends to be a big element when it comes to forestry in particular. You'll see that the Yurok have been asked to include tribal ecological knowledge, the Hoopa Valley folks, in their forestry. And then as you move further up the West Coast, there in Oregon and in Washington, those tribes, the Colville tribes, the Yakima Nation, all play, you know, sort of have their forestry techniques implemented in U.S. forest plans. So that co-stewardship, that co-management element sometimes manifests as working with a government agency, and sometimes it manifests as the tribe taking over the land entirely.
You know, you've covered this land back movement across the country. So just to zoom out a little bit from your perspective, can you just give us a little more history about the movement and really what sort of initiated it? We've talked about a lot of examples, but when did this sort of land back movement start again?
You saw the rumblings of it between 2010 and 2020. You really began to hear more from folks, in particular around the Standing Rock protests, around that pipeline out there.
Yeah.
For years, obviously, there's been intrusions and broken treaties. And in the 1950s, they began outright terminating tribes so they could move them to the city and take the land that was previously occupied by the tribes for themselves, that was the federal government. Between 2010 and 2020, you started to see tribes really start to push back against this idea that they were displaced and they didn't exist anymore, or they weren't entitled to the lands that they had not ceded in treaties. In particular, you saw that phrase a lot. We didn't cede those lands, unceded lands. And by 2016, you saw the Standing Rock thing, as I mentioned. And then by 2020, people were kind of getting fed up. There was a major protest around the Roosevelt Monument. From my research, that's kind of what kicked things off, this idea of land back. We want to really focus on returning land. And in the time since, there was a big focus on, as I said, on that co-management, that co-stewardship aspect of forests in particular, but other kinds of lands, rivers, under the Biden administration. And even as we have moved into the Trump administration, you've heard about trying to maintain more positive relationships with the tribes. And part of that is, where you can, allowing them to either buy back lands on their own. Conservancies have helped them buy back lands. Some people have made private gifts of lands that once belonged to tribes. And across the country, you're just kind of seeing, especially since from 2020 to now, you're seeing just it kind of accelerate.
That was KVPR's Elizabeth Arkalian speaking with Chez Oxendine. He's a reporter with Tribal Business News. And that's today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Sarith Hawk. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for, how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.